audacious skies for amber waves of grace, for purple mountains' majesty.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. The views of our guests, the views of our callers, and certainly we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us a Mr. Jimmy Walter. We've never talked before other than arranging the program, but I was reading the New York Times, as I do every day, and once in a while you actually find something very interesting in the New York Times. And here was an article about a man who felt very strongly about what had happened on 9-1-1, strongly enough that he had invested his own money to run full-page ads and television advertisements questioning the government's position on 9-1-1. And I thought, well, anybody who really, is willing to do that obviously has strong feelings, and, well, I'd like to talk to him and have him on our program. So without further ado, this is Mr. Jimmy Walter. Thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners, what was it that set you off to begin to realize that we really weren't getting the truth about what was happening?
Well, initially began back when Colin Powell was lying to the United Nations in February of last year about Saddam, Al-Qaeda, et cetera, et cetera. I was I'm very much on the Internet, and so I was getting the stories from the foreign press about what everybody from George Tenet on down was saying. And it was totally 180 degrees from what Colin Powell was telling the UN, what the Bush administration was telling the people of the United States. And so I ran some full-page ads in the New York Times, USA Today, other type nationwide newspapers and regional newspapers that Colin Powell was, in fact, lying, trying to stop this resolution. So that failed, of course. He didn't get the resolution, so if I had some contribution to that, I'm happy I did. But in the overall outlook, we failed because we did, in fact, go in and invade Iraq. And as I, George Tenet, and others predicted, we are now immersed in a quagmire. But at the different meetings, I ran into a man named Eric Hufschmidt, and Eric wrote a book called Painful Questions, and I got his book in video, but I never looked at it for like 6 months. I said, no way these buildings were brought down by dynamite. A friend of mine cajoled me into watching it about the middle of July, and it was an epiphany to me. I knew that these buildings were not brought down by 19 hijackers with box cutters who couldn't pass flight school. When you see those steel beams flying straight out horizontally from the sides of the buildings, those clouds of powdered concrete shooting out of there hundreds of miles an hour, you realize this had to be done with explosives. It couldn't have been a mere collapse. When you start measuring the data, the fact that the buildings fell at the speed of gravity, that if you dropped a steel ball off the side of the building, you and the building would have hit the ground at the same time. You know that those floors had to be exploded out.
Well, I think it's fascinating. I've actually had Eric as a guest on our program, met him at various meetings, and certainly he's done some very, very convincing work, which we're indebted to him for. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Jimmy Walter as we explore what really happened on the morning of September 11th.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jimmy Walter. We're talking about what happened on the morning of 9/11. And, of course, I can remember sitting in my chair. I do a radio program every morning at 7 o'clock. And about 6:30, getting ready for the program, I got a call on the from one of my friends and said, turn on the television, watch what's happening. And I think that, like most people, I was just shocked, stunned, watching, of course, those billowing clouds of black smoke coming out of the Twin Towers, and, of course, with Tom Brokaw in the foreground, you know, looking very seriously, telling what it was. And you know, it was really, as I watched, and we were riveted to the videos. We were running two videos, taking pictures and recording that for future use. And it wasn't until, well, later in the day when we began to see this picture over and over and over again of the children dancing in the streets in some Arab community. And suddenly they showed that over and over again to let us know that, at least in the Arab countries, they were celebrating what had happened in America. And then the next thing I noticed, the emotion. And then after very long, why, suddenly they were showing the tear-stained faces, and then there was music in the background. And I suddenly, as I watched this, I said, this is a Hollywood production. This is a production. This is evoking an emotional response in me. And as we went through the week and we got to the weekend, and then we had the massive Hollywood production with Willie Nelson singing America the Beautiful, and about 39 verses of it over and over and over again, and all the people were there. I think Clint Eastwood was there and Sylvester Stallone, and it was a Hollywood spectacular. And I'm beginning to wonder, are we being manipulated? That was the first inkling I had, that there was something more to this than met the eye. And, of course, we were all told about, you know, it was those two planes that had brought down the buildings. But nobody wanted to talk about why Building 7 came down at 5 o'clock in the evening when nothing hit that building. So why don't you pick up, Mr. Walter, as you, you know, as you evaluate this, and suddenly you see Eric's videos, and you realize, as and those of you who haven't seen Eric of Schmidt's video, why, we can let you know how to get it. You know, you begin to realize that something is amiss, that there obviously had to be other things going on there that day.
Well, the Building 7 was never hit by an airplane. It was a block and a half away from the World Trade Towers. There were parts of buildings that stood intact between it. Both buildings on either side of it were not harmed at all, yet it collapsed straight down in a perfect controlled demolition type fall at 5:30 that evening. A Federal Emergency Management Agency has said in their report to the 911 Commission that they have no idea why Building 7 fell. Yet Larry Silverstein, the leaseholder of the World Trade Center, leaseholder of Building 7, says on tape, on video, and in the film America Rebels, that he told the New York Fire Department to destroy the building with explosives. The term is pull it, which is an industry-specific term, which means to knock out the center columns of the building with explosives and cause the outer walls to be pulled into the center in a perfect controlled demolition, postage stamp type fall. And that's exactly what happened to Building 7. Now, why has not the Federal Emergency Management Agency talked to and interviewed Mr. Silverstein, since he allegedly told the New York Fire Department, which, by the way, does not destroy buildings with explosives? Who would run around a burning building with explosives trying to plant them in exactly the same spot, exactly the right spot, to bring the building down? Furthermore, if you look at the damage done to the World Trade Towers, both of those planes hit off-center. At best, the top should have toppled over. Half the building was untouched by fire. You can see that two sides of the building were perfectly okay and had intact steel girders, but instead of falling over on the side of the damage, the building fell straight down. The only explanation is that these buildings were pre-wired with explosives. Larry Silverstein insured both buildings, the whole complex rather, for $7 billion and collected. And he did that 6 months before this incident happened. And no one has investigated this. And the 911 commission report completely says nothing about it whatsoever.
Well, I think that the most amazing thing is that Building 7. And anybody, I know you've seen pictures of it, and I hope that our listeners will get pictures of it. In fact, there's a video out. It's called In Plain Sight, and I know you sent me a copy of that. It's put together by Dave Von Kleist.
Right.
And he actually has pictures. As you see Building 7 coming down, it's typical demolition. It's right at the bottom of the building. The whole bottom of the building disappears, and
you
the building
the
collapses straight
collapse
down.
Straight down from the top. This only happens if you have a controlled demolition.
Right, and of course, what's interesting is the buildings 3, 4, 5, and 6, the centers of these just sort of disappeared. You know, wonder what happened. The outer buildings, a lot of the structures there remained intact, but the centers of all those buildings collapsed. They weren't hit by any airplanes. Why did those buildings collapse as well?
Well, they may have been hit by falling debris, but Building 7 was a block and a half away, and the buildings on either side of it didn't have any significant fires. Either Building 7 had no significant fires. They tell us after the fact, people like this Posner guy from Miami, oh yeah, well everyone knows they've been consumed by diesel fire. Well, the Cardigan Group tried to destroy a building with diesel fire with jet fuel and could not do it. They tried and they could not do it. If you look at the pictures of Hiroshima, you'll see the steel frame buildings are still standing after an atomic bomb. Diesel fuel, jet fuel, does not burn hot enough to destroy steel. Yet these buildings all collapse perfectly straight down on time. And that's the other thing. You mentioned this earlier about a sort of implied psychology in this thing. The two planes that hit the World Trade Center took off at approximately the same time. But the second plane diverted and did not hit for almost an hour later so that the camera crews could set up to photograph it going on into the building. The Pentagon, the other crashes, the other collapses, they were all spaced in like a fighter in a prize ring. They're going to left to right, a left to right. They're keeping you off balance, one shock after another. And then the TV news media came on and told us immediately afterwards, oh, we know Osama did it. He denied that, by the way. Yet, 2 days before, no one had any inkling this was going to happen.
Well, I think that's the most incredible thing, that they convinced the American people that, oh, gee, we just couldn't get any people working at all with the Islamic movement. We had no idea. We couldn't, because of the restrictions placed on the FBI and CIA, they couldn't infiltrate this at all. Well, that just is not true. In fact, one of the most incredible stories was actually let out by Eleanor Hill and, when she testified before the Joint Senate Select House Senate Select Committee a couple of years ago. And she pointed out, and I think it was the 18th of September of the year 2002, that in April of the year 2000, one of the hijackers defected. And he went to the FBI office in Newark, New Jersey, and he walked in and he said, I'm a hijacker. I'm part of a team of six or seven people trained in Pakistan, trained to take over a 747, and we're going to hijack your plane. And although Eleanor Hill's testimony had mentioned that they were going to try to fly to Afghanistan or crash it into the ocean with all the people on board, apparently the real story was led up by Paul Thompson in his timeline.
Right.
He actually said that the plan was to crash it into buildings here in the United States. But the incredible thing, the FBI gives this man lie detector tests, determines that he's valid, he's what he says he is, they report it to Washington, D.C., and instead of wanting to apprehend the other Arab hijackers who are here as part of a team to capture our planes and crash them into buildings, why they send this hijacker back to England. They even sent FBI agents along with him to make sure he got out of the country. Now, why would the FBI do something like that? Didn't they want to catch the rest of the hijackers who were planning on taking, you know, overpowering our airplanes and crashing them into buildings? Doesn't make sense.
Well, it's worse than that, because the fact of the matter is that we have the testimony from the FBI agents in the Minnesota office that their warnings were actually suppressed. And back in 1994, testimony from the people who did the original attack on the World Trade Towers shows that the FBI funded and provided the explosives for that attack.
Well, we know that they had Mr. Salem, who had actually infiltrated the cell, and he had wanted to get the explosives, that would not explode. And instead of, keeping him in the cell to try to thwart this blowing up of the World Trade Center, why, they insulted him and forced him out so that they lost their contact with what was going on. I mean, that is such an incredible story, and the American people have never heard of it. And eventually, then, after the World Trade Center was blown up, they had to give him $1 million, I think, maybe several million dollars, to re-infiltrate this Islamic terrorist cell in New York City with a blind sheikh, Rockman, and eventually he was responsible for the testimony that sent these people to prison for life.
Well, the FBI is, since J. Edgar Hoover's obvious criminal activities in spying and perverting the Constitution, that these people really haven't changed much, it doesn't seem.
No, but we got a lot of real problems in our... And the thing is that, obviously, we did have agents within the Islamic terrorist movement. They just can't tell the American people that. But there were a number of people. I know that there's William Grigg, who writes for The New American, who says he's talked to three FBI agents who said, sure, we knew when the attack was going to come. We knew it was going to happen, but we were prevented from coming forward. And
well, they had wires from Israel. They had wires from Germany, I think. Everyone was warning them it was about to happen.
Right, there were actually 11 different countries that had sent warnings over to us saying they're going to attack the United States, and the head of the FBI and the head of the FBI, the CIA, testified under oath, well, we knew there was going to be an attack, but we thought it was going to be overseas. And you know, the most amazing thing is nobody's ever challenged them.
Well, no one's had a chance to get them into court. It's an amazing thing that they keep crying national security. The widows and orphans and brothers, sisters of the people killed in the World Trade Towers can't get anybody into court because the United States government keeps crying national security. Who are they protecting? What? There's no secrets of the United States in there.
Well, I know that there are at least there's one lawsuit that's been brought against the Saudis because I don't think there's any question that the Saudis were involved in financing this whole terrorist movement, Al-Qaeda, and specifically several of the terrorists who were involved in the attack on the World Trade Center. And they were getting regular checks from the wife of the American ambassador, the Arabian ambassador to the United Nations, to the United States. And yet, of course, the government has done everything they could to block that lawsuit against the Saudis. And you have to ask yourself, why? Why can't this be brought out in court if there's nothing to hide? Why are they hiding it?
Because bin Laden's family and the Bushes are close friends. I mean, they flew them out of the country. I mean, I personally think they didn't know anything about it, because if you knew something about it, you wouldn't be sitting in the United States. You'd be gone. But the fact of the matter is that the Bush family and the bin Laden family have been close friends for decades, a century maybe.
And I think that is really very, very true. And then, of course, there was one of bin Laden's half-brothers who was here, that there were really, really some very, very strong implications that, or indications that he really did know a lot more about the a terrorist attack, and yet he was allowed to leave without...
Standard operating procedure is to interview all the family members of somebody to find out where they go, what they like, what they do. And the Bush family flew the bin Laden family out, and the FBI should have interviewed them.
Well, of course, the FBI takes its orders from the President of the United States, and I agree with you. I think that we should really ask ourselves, why did they let them leave, both members of the Saudi royal family and members of the Bin Laden family allowed to leave without finding out what they knew. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jimmy Walters. And, of course, he's been very, very concerned about what's going on in the background of the 911 attack. Do you think we're ever going to be able to get an independent investigation? Because certainly the Joint Select Committee, which had the first investigation, was limited in what it was allowed to do, and the 911 Commission was simply a rubber stamp for the administration. And what I don't understand, if there is nothing to hide, why is the administration so intent upon concealing what happened on 9/11 from the American people?
Well, obviously they have a lot to hide, all the way from malfeasance and preventing it to their own orders in the ecological environmental health disaster that ensued. The fact of the matter is that the White House Council on the Environment ordered the EPA to modify their warning of asbestos in the air to an all clear, it's air safe to breathe, 3 days after the disaster occurred. There were over 400,000 pounds of lead, 100 tons of asbestos, enough mercury to contaminate 2,500 city blocks. The air was the quality of Drano, but the White House told the people of New York City that it was okay to go back there in order to get Wall Street open, and that is in the Inspector General of the EPA's report on this incident. You don't have to believe that 19 Arabs or somebody came in and did something in the United States or not. We're talking about a fact that the EPA warning was edited by the White House in order to get people to go back to work in an environment in which half of the cleanup crew have been hospitalized, hundreds of firefighters can no longer work, and 14 guide dogs died.
And I really think that really is such a terrible tragedy. The American people don't understand the number of people who worked in that cleanup who were told it was perfectly all right, you know, just go ahead and work it. Even many of them were wearing, the facial masks.
They were told not to wear the facial masks so they wouldn't alarm the other people.
Really, were they? They weren't allowed then to wear the masks?
They were not allowed to wear them. This was orders that came down on high. The New York Health Department told people, oh, well, if the dust is particularly heavy, make sure you wear long pants. This stuff is loaded with asbestos, lead, uranium products out of the smoke detectors, vanadium that was higher than they've ever tested anywhere else, including active volcanoes.
Now, I know an awful lot of those people are sick and ill, and probably a lot of them will have permanent disability as a result. Are they taking any actions against the government?
Well, every time they try to take an action, they get a national security thing wrapped on them. People are doing it. We have there's a special commission on the environment up there, and then there's the 911 World Trade Center Environmental Fund, I believe it's called, Jenna Orkin is with them, who are all trying to get something done. But the fact of the matter is, this is not even negligence. This is criminal malfeasance from the part of the White House to tell people to go back to work when you have deadly maiming levels of contaminants in the air.
Hold that thought for just a minute as we bring our other stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Jimmy Walter. We're talking about what really happened in 911. And, of course, the effort to bring out the information you're not getting elsewhere. I have been reading, certainly in the New York Times, the discussions of the number of people who were there working in the cleanup crew now have permanent pulmonary problems. And yet, of course, they're really not getting any compensation for it. And everything is being done to block the American people from realizing what happened. You know, one of the most amazing things about what happened that that day were those clouds of pulverized cement. I've never seen anything like that before. Is there anything like that in record, recorded any place to explain why all of that cement would have been pulverized? I could see they're trying to tell us it would pancake one floor and the other. Fine, but that wouldn't make it necessarily pulverized into a cloud, would it?
Well, actually, it's mutually exclusive. Here's the deal. For concrete to be pulverized, you have to have resistance. In other words, something has to hold it in place hard enough so whatever is going to hit it hits it hard enough to pulverize the concrete. But what you're saying is that the bolts on each floor gave way rapidly. We can't have it both ways. If the bolts are giving away rapidly, then they're not holding long enough and hard enough to pulverize the concrete. If they're holding long enough and hard enough to pulverize the concrete, they're not giving way. And so when you see these finely pulverized clouds of concrete coming out, and remember, the concrete was in a 4-inch steel reinforced pan with a steel back covered with 2 layers of concrete. There's no way it's going to jump out of this pan, get crushed, and spew out of the windows at hundreds of miles an hour. This had to have been done with explosives.
And certainly you see an awful lot of debris that's flying out, as well as the clouds.
You see steel beams hundreds of feet away flying vertically straight out. It's amazing that anyone would think this was a collapse.
Well, you know, they say it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and convincing enough, most people will believe. I think Adolf Hitler said that, as I remember. But
well, him or Goebbels or one of his flunkies, but you're absolutely correct, and that's what's happened here. They timed this thing as a psychological attack, and then the news media came in immediately after and told us Osama did it, when we were the most vulnerable, the most listening to authority figures, because we were in a state of shock.
Well, because the frightening implications are, you know, if you look at what happened as far as the Pentagon, I do not believe that a plane hit the Pentagon. I mean, there's so much evidence.
Something hit the Pentagon, but it wasn't or not a 757. The pictures clearly show that.
And one of my friends, do you know Jim Mars, who wrote the book initially, The War on Freedom, and then he wrote another book entitled Inside Job? And he actually,
I know Inside Job.
You know Inside Job? Well, actually, he talked to a woman who was actually in the Pentagon when the crash occurred. She had her child with her. He actually, according to Jim, and he's talked to the woman, she actually saw light. She came out through the hole in the side of the building that's been described and, of course, staggered out and was taken to the hospital. But when she got to the hospital, a couple of men in black come to see her and say, well, the plane hit. And she said, there wasn't any plane. I came out through the hole. Oh, yes, there was a plane there and a great fire, and there wasn't any fire, there wasn't any plane. And they just told her to take the money and be quiet.
Yeah. Well, you can plainly see in the first pictures after the Pentagon attack that there's only a 16-foot wide hole in the center. Now, mind you, the engines on the 757 weigh 5 tons. They're the heaviest, densest part of the airplane. There's no hole in the building at all where the engines would have hit. None at all. The windows are intact where the wings are. Now, you can say the wing disintegrated on the concrete, reinforced concrete, but it did not disintegrate on the glass window, and these glass windows are intact.
Well, it's amazing, you know, that they've been able to sell the American people that the fact that the this 757?
Yeah, alleged 757.
The 757 hit that building, and of course I've talked to people who say that they saw was a plane coming in, but was it a 757? Was it some other sort of plane?
The majority of the witnesses said it was a commuter-sized aircraft. Some said it had no windows.
Right, and I've actually talked to people who actually said that they saw it fly back by one of the buildings right fairly close there, and then, of course...
But people don't tell you this in the aeronautics. This plane has a wingspan of 129 feet. That means it has ground effect at 65 feet, yet it's alleged to have come in and hit the Pentagon inches off the ground. You can't do that. You can't fly a plane that big, that fast, that low to the ground.
Not when you've never flown a plane before. We're going to be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jimmy Walter, and he's, of course, invested a great deal of time and effort trying to get the American people to question what we've been told. One of the most interesting things is that in New York City, a recent Zogby poll actually showed that 50% of the people do not believe the official government story. Now, that to me is amazing. You know, with all the propaganda they have and all the control they have, 50% of the people do not believe the government story. Did you commission that study, or how did that study get done?
I did, and pardon me for giving you a small correction here. The study showed that, the poll showed that 66% believed that they should reopen the investigation, and that 49.3% of New York City residents believed that people in the administration knew about 911 in advance and let it happen.
Well, I think that's an amazing, amazing statistic. Now, was that the poll taken before or after you ran the ads there?
It was taken about the same time we started running the majority of the ads. But I cannot believe that our ads ran long enough to do that. Our TV ads didn't start until almost a month after that, and that would have had the most effect on that poll. So, no, I'm going to say no, our ads had no effect on that poll.
Well, now, basically, as far as your ads were concerned, were they in the New York Times? Were they? Because I read the New York Times regularly, and I don't ever remember seeing the ads.
Well, they're definitely in the New York Times. I've been in New York Times, I think, five or six times with the ad. We were in Newsweek, Business Week. We were in Forbes. We were in the Village Voice. Numerous times, and I saw the ad myself in the New York Times numerous times.
Was it in the one that we get out here on the West Coast?
It should have been in the National Edition. I have to admit that I don't know that. It may not have come in the National Edition. It may have been only in the New York Edition, but or and not on the West Coast. But the ads are special. We've targeted the New York City area, so I have to admit I don't know the answer to that.
All right, well, then the important thing is, what sort of response did you get from the people there? In other words, did people call, or were some of them angry? Were some of them in agreement with you?
We had thousands of people volunteer to help. We had thousands of people tell us things we can't tell you on the air. We had thousands of people donate, and we finally got their attention. But the thing it took to get their attention was the TV ad. We ran 2,830-second spots in the 2.5 weeks prior to the election.
2,000 ads.
2,830 seconds.
Oh boy, well that's a lot of. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jimmy Walter, and he was just telling me that I didn't realize this. He had actually run 2,830-second spots on television in the New York area, and many of these very, very shortly before the election in New York City. In other words, trying to let people understand we have not gotten the truth about what happened on 911. He ran a full, were those full-page ads that you were running in the New York Times?
Some full-page, some half-page.
All right, fine. But at least they were run in the New York area. I was rather surprised because, you know, I read the New York Times every day. I go through all of those things, and I don't recall, at least in the international edition, which I get, which is printed, I think, here on the West Coast. And well, anyway, but, you know, the only reason I even knew about this was because I saw a small article in the New York Times talking about this, and so mm-hmm. I wanted to investigate it even more. And it's fascinating to realize that things can go on the East Coast, and unless you have access, you're not going to get information throughout the rest of the country. It's almost as if they can censor our access to information. But the fact that here we do have the option of alternative radio and shortwave and internet and stations across America listening to this program. So at least you're beginning to find out what was going on in New York. Now, do you think that in any way impacted on the vote there? Because I think the state still went for Bush. No, it actually went for Kerry, didn't it?
New York went for Kerry. Manhattan went for Kerry heavily. But the impact I'm trying to have is on the Attorney General of the State of New York. This man, Elliot Spitzer, has had the guts to stand up to the big boys. He can get an investigation going. The federal judges and all are going to have a harder time telling him national security when he's talking about the mass murder of 2,801 people in the city of New York that day. Now, if Elliot Spitzer won't do it, then we're up the creek. Because the fact of the matter is there's no way that the federal government under Gonzalez, who advocates torture down to pesticide drinking, Tom DeLay, who thinks that there's no way we're going to get an impeachment thing against George W. Bush unless there's some sort of criminal investigation into what happened on those days.
Now, in other words, a delay is certainly not going to go out on a limb and take a chance on getting into problems. Have you been able to contact him or people who are close to him?
No way. I mean, this man, there's no way that you'll ever get anything that's anti-Bush on the floor of the House of the United States government.
Not at least not as well as long as the Republicans have the overwhelming control.
Well, not Tom DeLay, and then they increase their percentages. I'm hopeful that the Ohio recount thing will throw the whole thing out. But the problem is that procedurally, none of these Senate or House races have been contended in all the other states. And it seems equally reasonable that if they perverted the vote in Ohio for the president, they perverted everywhere for every race.
Well, I think, you know, most people don't even realize that the strong irregularities there were in the state of Ohio. I know that there's one precinct that was reported with 800 registered voters and about almost 4,000 votes for Bush. So that was an incredible thing. And it was explained by saying that there was a hiccup in the machine. There was a hiccup in the voting machine. And I don't know how a hiccup in the voting machine could come up with all those votes for George Bush.
Well, first of all, they're BSing to begin because machines don't have hiccups. All right? I mean, they're giving you some sort of folksy analogy to make you believe that the machines screwed up. The machines did screw up, but the odds are, I've seen the statistics, 250 million to one against what happened in terms of the differences between the exit polls and the tallies.
Now, basically, the exit polls show that John Kerry was going to carry the state. And, of course, then when the votes came in from the electronic machines, which were, of course, put in there by people who were Bush supporters, why the election went to Bush. Is that right?
Absolutely correct. And we're not talking about small percentages. We're talking about percentages that over 3 standard deviations away from the mean. Statistically impossible.
And, of course, in all the other states, my understanding, were pretty well the red states, of course, which, of course, were going to go for Bush, why the exit polls agreed with, the voting machines. In fact, that happened apparently in almost every state except Ohio and, I think, Florida. And those
In 10 states, the odds went against Kerry all the way. And in the 9 of them, in the 10th state, it was as predicted. This is what gives you the 250 million to 1 impossibility of this vote not having been fraudulent.
All right. Well, let's go to Tim, who's calling from Indianapolis, Indiana. Hi, Tim. Are you there?
Oh, hi. Thanks, gentlemen. I'd like to make a couple quick comments on the election. First of all, when I heard back in 2002... that Al Gore wasn't going to run, then I knew that the election was compromised. You guys know, and I know, that Al Gore would have easily defeated Bush, and then they put John Kerry in there, a bonesman. He didn't want to win the election. He was just going through the motions because Bill and Al and Hillary the three biggest powerful Democrats that you have out there, they didn't campaign at all this past summer. So the election was compromised.
All right. Did you have any...
And also, on 9/11, real quick, I keep hearing about Arabs. Arabs, you're making paradoxical statements. You're saying that the explosives were set in these buildings. Obviously, they weren't set by Arabs. It confuses the public who are ignorant already. The people involved were not Arabs. They were Italian. Rudy Giuliani, he had full knowledge. George Pataki, governor of New York, Polish. And Larry Silverstein, Jewish, and George Bush, a German. No Arabs involved at all.
All right, fine. Thank you so much. And how would you respond to our caller from Indiana?
Well, actually, not that poorly. I think that he's absolutely correct that we have a lot of people there that are not Arabs at all, that have no possibility of being pre-wiring those buildings from explosives. It had to be an inside job. Now, I wouldn't want to start banding about nationalities, but we're almost forced to do that because of these things. The fact is that Larry Silverstein had shared those buildings for $7 billion and is a heavy hitter in trade with Israel, serves on several trade boards of Israel, is very close to the people in Israel, Ariel Sharon, and those types. So these things need to be investigated. But equally, it also needs to be investigated is the fact that the neocons, a project for the New American Century, Wolfowitz, Cheney, et al., got what they wanted, what they predicted that would need a new Pearl Harbor type event, that the Pentagon got what they wanted, that Bechtel, Halliburton, and those people got what they wanted, and that that George W. Bush got unlimited power. So we've got a lot of people here who gained that should be investigated, and to this date, not a single one of them has been investigated.
Well, somebody called in. They didn't want to come on the air, but they're a little skeptical. And the question they ask is, where did you get the funding for the ad campaign? Were you being financed by some secret backers with an axe to grind like the Democratic National Commission? Now, this is a little embarrassing to ask you the question, but I think it's a legitimate question.
Well, I inherited most of my money. I made some money with the money I inherited. But it's all my money. I have no chance to gain a thing. We sell some books. All of the profits we make from the books go back into more ads. And I am doing this to protect the United States of America, to find the real terrorists, the high-tech terrorists that attacked this country and will attack it again to pervert our political process and to take our freedoms. It is our own government because of these acts that is taking our freedoms, and I want this country back the way it used to be, not the way in this black terror, this black fear they've put us into.
And I knew the answer to the question, but I wanted to ask it because I think that some people would wonder, you know, was this simply an effort to discredit George Bush to try to get a John Kerry elected? You know, I didn't like either candidate, as a matter of fact. You know, I don't trust either one of them because...
Well, I think Kerry ran the worst campaign in history, and I have serious differences with some of the things he has to say. But the fact of the matter is that I have nothing to gain here.
Right.
I mean, I've lost this money. This money's never coming back.
Well, I congratulate you for being willing to really to become involved, because there's an awful lot of good people out there who won't get involved, who won't take a stand. Some of them are afraid. Some of them think that things are going to get better on their own. But what we need are people who will become involved and will, of course, put their money where really their feelings are. And I congratulate you for being willing to do that. Because this has been a very expensive undertaking. On the other hand, I'm sure it's had an effect there in the city of New York. Now, what are your plans? Are you intending to get these ads on across the country or what?
Well, we're regrouping right now. We're going to have a contest. This is not an offer on the air, but we're going to have a contest. We're planning, trying to get one together that involves a $100,000 prize to anyone who can, the first person who can prove the administration's case on how the buildings collapsed, They have to enter. They have to pay an entry fee. They have to pass certain tests in order to win. But we really consider that a non-prize because no one's going to be able to do that. So what we've done is we now have a positive prize for the engineering students who can prove that what did happen, or failing that, can prove that the administration case did not happen. And we have it broken into modules. It'll be a $10,000 prize for college students, a $10,000 prize for high school students, and hundreds of $100 prizes for runner-ups, as well as prizes for the best modules. For instance, the energy needed to pulverize concrete. The person come up with the best model for the energy needed to pulverize concrete and how that relates to the World Trade Center will win a $1,000 prize.
Well, I think that anybody who really stops and thinks about what really happened that day has to really begin to question how that happened. And, you know, Eric Schmidt has actually put together a book, and you sent me a copy of it. And if you look at the pictures that day, and I can remember actually seeing the movies of the top of the buildings beginning to tilt very strongly to one side. Now, you know, when the top of a building of that magnitude begins to tilt to one side, you would think it would just keep on going.
It did. It fell on Building 4, and it completely debunked the administration's case that the weight of the building caused the rest of that building to collapse. And what I meant to say is the weight of the top of that building caused the rest of that building to collapse. It didn't. It fell off. It couldn't cause the rest of the building to collapse, and that proves it had to have been done with explosives.
I think that really is a fascinating thing. Is that in Eric's movie? Because I actually have.
Oh, yes. Well, it's in his book for sure. His book's actually better than his movies because you can sit down and study the stuff. The movie goes by and you have to remember what he said. But if you look, for instance, in Eric's books on the pages between 52 and 57 or so, you can see the building collapse and you see these steel beams hundreds of feet away from the center of the sides of the building. Straight down collapses don't do that.
No, of course, they don't. And funny, now, do you have a website?
Yes, we'd love to get the material. We'd love to have people to go to reopen911.org and sign the petition to get Elliot Spitzer to open a real investigation of what happened in the mass murder of 2,801 people on 9/11 of 2001.
Now, is that 9/11 or just 911?
And just reopen 911.org, or you can call 888-INVESTIGATE. Either one, sign up for the petition. We got to get this thing open. These terrorists are going to attack us again, and we have to find the real terrorists. It wasn't. 9 of the 19 alleged terrorists are alive in Saudi Arabia or the Middle East. It's utterly ridiculous what they told us.
Well, I think that is one of the most shocking revelations, is that many of these people are quite alive. And the interesting thing is, the only major magazine I saw that carried that was Insight Magazine, which I think was one of the finest magazines we had in the country. And shortly thereafter, they lost all their advertisers and they were forced to close down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is what happens to anybody who tries to get the information out. So, but anyway, you're trying to collect then signatures on a petition. And will people send these petitions on their own, or can they
send
them to your website?
You do it online, and none of these have legal force. I mean, we have no ability to force Spitzer to do anything, but what we're doing is providing the names and the addresses to people, particularly if you're New Yorkers, who want this thing redone, and that still translates into votes and the future races. The New York City people took the bullet. They were the ones that attacked. They're the ones that know the most, and they're the ones that deserve answers and have the real terrorists prosecuted.
Well, I think that the important thing is that there are an awful lot of people back in the city of New York, as shown by the Zogby poll, who do not believe the government story. I was amazed.
66%.
Right, and but see, that was not the what I got. I got off the internet, of course, and all I got was that 49% of the people didn't believe what the government said, or maybe 49% wanted another investigation. No, I guess 49% didn't believe the government's story. But what was the real? What were the real?
49% believed members of the government knew the attack was okay. going to happen and did nothing to prevent it.
And what was the other figure?
66% want the investigation reopened because they don't believe the government story. 66%.
Well, I think that
in a CNN flash poll, 90% believe members of the administration knew about it and did nothing. Now, that's not scientific, but 90% in a CNN poll. Yet the New York Times did not think either of these stories was news fit to print.
Well, of course, we always used to say that the news that the New York Times sees fit to print.
Well, exactly. But the point of the matter is, what New Yorker wouldn't be interested in the fact that most New Yorkers want this investigation reopened?
Well, I think that there are an awful lot of people across America who know something's seriously wrong, but they're given that feeling that they're all alone. In other words, everybody else must be satisfied, so maybe I shouldn't speak out. But I think that anybody who thinks very seriously about what we saw that morning knows we haven't got the full story. And we're going to be back here in just a moment. We will welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Jimmy Walter, and we're talking about his effort to get a new independent investigation of 911. And of course, we're not going to get an investigation put on by the federal government, but his hope is that Elliot Spitzer, who's the Attorney General of the state of New York, who's already taken on people, some of the key people in government, key people in industries, and of course, believe me, the Wall Street Journal hates him because he's questioned some of the real crooks who've been getting away without, you know, nothing being done to them, that he would have the courage to open the investigation. Has anybody contacted him to see if he's interested in that?
Well, some of the reporters, we put forth I helped pay for a citizen's complaint that was filed back in October, and it was presented to the Attorney General's office in the city of New York, and they say they haven't quite looked at it yet. But these people are caged. They're not going to come out and announce that they're investigating until they're pretty sure they have some sort of case one way or the other. And so the complaint, citizen's complaint, was consigned by two victims' family and hundreds of very notable people. So we'll see what happens. But when I see people come out with books like O'Neill and other people and then 2 days later recant their book, the power of the people in office here is tremendous.
No, which O'Neill are you speaking of now?
The Treasury Secretary.
Okay, Paul O'Neill.
Paul O'Neill.
Did he ever recount what he didn't recount what he said in that book, did he?
He sort of did. He said, well, we didn't really mean that.
Well, you know, because he tells the story there. You know, in January or February of the year 2001, 8 to 9 months before the 911 attack, why he's going, tells going to the National Security Council meetings, and there's Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney and certainly Donald Rumsfeld talking about how are we going to justify a preemptive strike on Iraq.
Right.
I mean, that was the most amazing, amazing story that he put out there. And he's saying, why are we talking about Iraq, you know? Why are we talking about the economy or other things? He has no idea the 911 attack is coming. He has no idea. They've already made up their mind to attack Iraq. And he even tells there, I think it's on page 96, the fact that, you know, they're already deciding how to divide up the oil in Iraq, the oil fields in Iraq, 6 to 7 months before the 911 attack. Now, anybody
right.
believes that they were not looking for an excuse to go to war, I think is really not very smart.
Well, they're not, and that's what they depend upon. we have a war of advertising agencies.
Hold that thought right just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Jimmy Walter, and we've been talking for the last hour about what really happened on 911, and of course we'll be going for another hour. We invite your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central California, central part of California, at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and of course, if you'd like to get more information, why, you can call the 888-INVESTIGATE. That's 888-468-3784. That's 888-468-3784. Or go to www.reopen911.org. That's www.reopen911.org. And, of course, remember, of course, we carry several books we think are very important. One of them is called War on Freedom. It's written by a gentleman over in England, and I can never pronounce his name. Is it Nazid, something of the sort? But he does an excellent job of going over all the evidence that points out that we were not given the truth as far as what happened on 911. We carry a Jim Marr's excellent book, Inside Job, going into the fact that just by chance, on that morning, there were a number of military exercises that involved a plane crashing into a building. And so when the air traffic controllers were evaluating what was going on, they thought that some of these hijackings could very well have been part of this game, this war game that was going on. And they were even putting artificial blips onto the radar screens to confuse the issue. And NORAD didn't understand what was going on. But then there's been so much effort to conceal what really happened anyway. You certainly would want to get the Inside Job by Jim Marr, who's certainly one of my favorite authors and personal friends. So then, of course, we carry Cover Up by Peter Lance. We carry a Cover Up by Dr. Dennis Cuddy and his second book, entitled September 11th, Prior Knowledge. And we think if you read these books together and then get some of them that Jimmy Walter has on his website, going into the Eric Hupschmidt's description of what happened to the buildings, and I'm sure that there are other books there as well, you need to understand that if we do not get the American people to understand what happened on 911, why we're going to continue with this war in the Middle East. And I really fear, if you read the writings of the Project for the New American Century members, that they are planning on a war with Iran. Doesn't matter whether it's irrational or not. Doesn't matter that Iran has just signed a $200 billion contract with China, and if we were to attack Iran, it could result in World War III. They have their agenda. They're going to go ahead with it, no matter what the American people feel, unless, of course, the American people begin to question what really happened on that morning. And of course, if we could get an investigation and prove that we have been lied to, the information we've been given is not true. And of course, anybody with an ounce of intelligence who's ever heard the story of the passport that fluttered down from the North Tower, got out of the flaming inferno of the plane and out of the flaming inferno of the building, and just flutters down, arrives on the sidewalk two blocks away from the North Tower, and is picked up by a passerby and given to a police officer. And this is all described in the staff report of the 911 commission. We'll be glad to provide any of you with the pages from that. How could that happen? If that did not happen, it means that that was planted. It means that they were trying to create the impression that this Arab was on the plane, and whether he was or not, I don't know. But what I do know is that there's no way that passport could have survived. Not only that, there was another passport there from Flight 93 that went down in Pennsylvania. And that passport survived, too. Isn't that an amazing coincidence? Or is it a coincidence? Is it possible that everything we've been told has been created? It's all illusion and delusion, altering the perception of the American people. Well, to our listeners who are leaving us now in the great Northwest, why, we ask you just to pray for America and to pray for Radio Liberty. We'll be back again then with you on Thursday evening. And till then, may the Lord be with you.
gentlemen.
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Now, our guest this evening is Jimmy Walter, who has been running ads, television ads, and newspaper ads back in New York City. The amazing thing is that the majority of the people in New York believe that the government was involved in what happened that morning, and they do not believe the official government story. And I suspect that since those ads and television spots have been run, even more people are beginning to question what's going on. And this is the sort of thing we really need to get out across America, because of course we're being constantly besieged by the Rush Limbaughs and the Bill O'Reillys and the Sean Hannitys and the Dan Rather and the Tom Brokaw and the other establishment spokesmen of right, left. But they're not going to tell you the real truth about what happened, or they're going to raise any questions in your mind of what Mr. Walter on his own has taken upon himself to try to awaken the American people and try to get an independent investigation, a truly independent investigation. And right now they're trying to get Elliot Spitzer, who is the Attorney General of the State of New York, to take on this. And of course, Mr. Spitzer is not going to do anything unless he knows that he's got the American people behind him. But if he was getting enough emails and letters and faxes and calls from people across America, why, he might be willing to really stick his neck out. And I would think he would be risking his professional career and perhaps even his life if he did this. We certainly know what happened to Jim Garrison when he questioned the government's official story on what happened to President Kennedy. Why they did everything they could to destroy Jim Garrison. Does Elliot Spitzer have the courage? Well, he's not going to have it unless at least you're willing to become involved and at least to write to him and let him know that you would like to have something done. So I hope everybody here in our audience will go to the website that is
reopen911.org.
Go ahead. Give it one more time.
reopen911.org. Or call 888-INVESTIGATE.
All right, what sort of response are you getting? Have you been doing much in the way of talk radio to try to get people to know?
Oh, yes. I've been on 80-some shows now, and we've had thousands of responses of people who volunteer to help and contribute money and sign the petition, and we're continuing to build and keep it going.
All right, fine. Well, I think this is what it's going to take. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you're listening and you have a question or comment about what happened on 911, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Because this is a subject which we must not let die away. We've got to keep this on the front burner. Because if we don't, why, of course, we're going to be involved in one war after another. I believe, Jimmy had actually alluded to earlier, that the people in the Project for the New American Century, by their own admission, were looking for a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor.
Well, you saw today or yesterday that the United States says that they're going to take an action against Iran by themselves to the Security Council, despite the fact that the International Atomic Energy has backed down.
And I think that this is frightening, because the implications of going to war, you never know how a war is going to end. And we saw that in the First World War. It started out just with a little border clash between Serbia and Austria-Hungary. It ended with the destruction of Serbia, Austria-Hungary, of Germany, of the Turkish Empire, of the Russian Empire, and really of the eventually beginning of the end of the British Empire. We're going to be back in just a moment with our special guest, and we have, of course, with us on the line, Mr. Jimmy Walter. Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest is Jimmy Walter, and we have Roger calling from Allentown, and incidentally, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Roger, did you have a question? Roger, are you there?
Okay, now I'm connected. Yeah, thanks, gentlemen. Yeah, I did miss some of the show, but has anyone really... maybe I thought in a concise and then in an exhaustive form, cataloged the deficiencies of the 911 omission.
Well, now, what do you mean by that?
The commission, of course. In other words, the failures of the commission to look into, you know, whatever areas they should have and didn't cover.
Well, I helped fund a thing called the Omission Commission in New York City last September 11th. And David Ray Griffin has a new book out called The Commission's Omissions, I believe it's called. David Ray Griffin, who wrote the new Pearl Harbor. So, and then the Omission Commission Report has issued a statement on all of the omissions from the Commission's report on what actually happened on 911.
And I think that there are just so many things that they did not address at all.
They didn't address anything. Right. The only thing they addressed at all was NORAD, and they said, bad boy, don't do it again. Nobody got reprimanded. Nobody got court-martialed. And we had the greatest defense failure in the history of the United States.
And I think that's absolutely true. And I think that, you know, if this was really a failure, these people would have been fired. But they weren't. They were, most of them were rewarded.
And even reprimanded.
Right.
Some of them got promoted.
Right. So obviously they must have been done a far better job than the average person really realizes. Anything else, Roger?
Yeah, lastly, is there a decent internet-based extract of the omissions?
Well, you can go to 911truth.org and summerofTruth.org. Both of those, summerofTruth.org was the original website. I'm not sure it's still up, but try that. summerofTruth.org or 911truth.org, and you can also go to our site, reopen911.org. We have a lot of the stuff there as well.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Roger. Let's go to Russell calling us from Austin, Texas. Hi, Russell. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Dr. Stan. Listen, Mr. Spitzer, I tried to get a hold of you, Dr. Stan, through your office. There's a fax over there now. Let me explain something to you. If you fellas will go to thepowerhour.com, that's Dave Von Kleist.
I know Dave very well.
Yeah, and if you go to the French translation down in the news section, are you there?
Hold out there for just a minute. Go right ahead. Go ahead.
Okay.
Right ahead. And, this is Russell calling from Austin, Texas. And
yes, sir.
Go ahead. And he's suggesting that, that you get information from Dave Von Kleist, a website. Go ahead.
No. Here's what I want to tell you.
Okay.
I'm an OX Air Force guy. Okay, now let me explain something to you. You go to that website and go to the French translation box and crank in there and look at, and bring up the photographs of the building itself.
You're talking now of Power Hour website.
Yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, and you will see the photographs that they took of the high-pressure turbine rotor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I know what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
And it came from an ADM, Air Defense Missile Dash Model 86.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's what hit the Pentagon. Okay, it was an Air Force cruise missile.
Exactly.
Period. And I don't know why everybody and all over the talk show radio will not come out and state categorically. That's there. It is right there in plain sight. The picture right there in the wreckage, and also a part of the control, aileron rudder, horizontal stabilizer control mechanism. A piece of that wreckage was photographed, and they've got that sitting in plain sight.
And the pictures that they released of the security camera show an aircraft that's way too small to be a 757. It has to be something like what you're talking about.
Yes, it is. It's about 35 feet long, and the wingspan's about roughly the same.
Okay. So it would actually fit in about a 16.
Yes, sir, it certainly would. And they had to decontaminate the fireman's clothing afterward. They also had to spread sand around the area.
And you know that the uranium levels are up there, according to Christopher Berlin of the American Free Press.
That's right.
And the depleted uranium nose for a bunker buster type missile like you're talking about.
That's what it was, sir. That's exactly what it was. The American people need to understand this. It was an inside job, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you know who is responsible for it.
Okay, anything else you want to say, Russell?
No, sir. I just wanted to pass that information on so people will stop talking about the airplane that hit the Pentagon.
I think it was so interesting that immediately after the attack on the Pentagon, they went around and they picked up all the security cameras, and of course they've only shown very, very selected pictures, the one they wanted to
show.
Yes, nothing in
Russian.
And the other interesting thing to me was that if you follow the sequence of the events that took place, that actually apparently evacuated the White House, and of course Norman tells about going there and going down into the sub-basement, into this bunker, the area they have, where they're talking about the plane coming in to hit the Pentagon. Why didn't they evacuate the Pentagon? That is the question that nobody asked.
Worse than that, they knew the plane was coming at New York, and Giuliani did not warn the people in the building to leave.
I know, of course.
It was an inside job, and I think most of the people in New York City realize it, and I think the American people need to understand that this was not done by a bunch of uneducated Arabs, and even if they could fly an airplane, they certainly
flunked
could.
Out of flight school.
I know, and they could not have taken that tanker plane off the ground. Believe me, they could not have done it.
You also know that plane, a 757, weighs 60 tons.
I know.
You don't fly it inches off the ground.
I know that. I'm aware of that. Well aware of that.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much for calling, Russell. Appreciate your input.
Thank you, Russell.
Bye.
Okay, and our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or out across America, here in the Central Coast of California, at 464-8295. Our guest is Jimmy Walter. We're talking about the strange things that happened on 911, and of course, you know, they've done everything they could to convince the American people it was just exactly as they said. The most amazing thing is that here the FBI had no idea there was going to be an attack, had no idea that these terrorists were in our country, had no idea that they were planning on hijacking planes, and yet within 24 hours they knew who all these people were. They had dossiers on them, they had their pictures. The most amazing bit of police work in such a short period of time for people who were so incompetent that they couldn't stop what happened that morning.
And 9 of the 19, 7 at least, of the alleged hijackers are still alive.
Yeah, that is a strange thing. You sort of wonder how that could have happened. In fact, I think even George Tenet admitted there was a question about it, but he said they were going to change their opinion. Well, let's go to Will, who's calling from Missouri. Hi, Will. How are you doing?
Very good, Dr. Stan. Thank you for taking my call. Jimmy, I've got two questions. One of them, the first one, is who packed or wired the World Trade Center buildings with the explosives and when it was done? It would have to, in my mind, be done by a contract, and people would have had to been coming and going. And I wonder whether anyone's done an investigation or asked any questions or sent out ads or information to the survivors.
Do you have any comments at all on that?
Sure. The World Trade Center lease was taken over by Larry Silverstein 6 months prior to the attack, and he replaced the entire security personnel with a company headed up by a brother of none other than George W. Bush.
Do you have any idea who the company was that was hired to do the work to wire the buildings?
Well, obviously that part would be secret, but the fact of the matter is that the security team in the World Trade Towers had to be in on it, or it couldn't have happened.
And I would like to suggest one.
And that security team was headed by the brother of George W. Bush.
Well, the occupants of the building would be probably in the building when it was being wired. I know I've worked in office buildings, and sometimes, quite often, I'd work late. You know, if someone was coming in on a contract to replace filters or come in to do a wiring or electrical work, they would be in the places dressed in white, name tags, badges, boxes, etc. I wonder if any of the people that survived witnessed anything like that in those 6 months.
We have eyewitness reports from people in the building that the security teams were securing off the elevator shafts on a regular basis, that they had a massive fire and evacuation drills the day before and the weeks before the evacuation. There was quite a bit of security activity. We have reports of people having high-tech location devices working within the elevator shafts. So these are just reports, rumors, eyewitness accounts passed on, not investigated or cross-examined by policemen and attorneys. So you have to take it both ways. But the fact of the matter is that if you look at those buildings come perfectly straight down, you realize it has to be a controlled demolition.
Right. I can agree with you completely. And now the question, my question, though, was if the people were in the building that survived and are still in New York or around, perhaps they would respond if you ran an advertisement. Did anybody see? What did you see? Who did you see? What was being done, et cetera? That kind of an idea, Jimmy.
Well, we have reports from the cleanup crews of melted steel in the basement. We have reports, like I told you about, from other people. But what we need is for some legal entity to open up a real investigation. I don't have the power to subpoena or even say much of anything.
Yeah.
Spitzer, the district attorney of Manhattan, somebody has to have the gusto to go out and actually take this on, and they are going to have the trial of the millennium, possibly.
Well, what you could do is, of course, go to that website, that's www.reopen911.org, and send a couple of emails in to Elliot Spitzer and get other people to do the same thing. If there's enough of a groundswell across America, you know, I bet he would be willing to stick his neck out.
He's a politician,
right,
and he's taken on the big boys on Wall Street, so he does have the guts to do it. But, you know, a little help won't hurt.
Okay,
and I thank you very much, Jimmy, for your efforts. I'm really very happy about what you're doing, and I'm with you in my heart 100%.
Okay,
well, thank you.
We lost Roland, who was calling us from New York, so let's go to Calvin from Flint, Michigan. And if Roland would like to call us back, why, he'll be first on the line. Okay, Calvin, go ahead. Did you have a question or comment?
Well, I have a comment. I believe y'all were talking about George Bush, and it sounded like y'all were not saying very good things about him, and I was just kind of curious of what was going on with that.
Well, would you like to respond to that, Jimmy?
Well, first of all, I do not think George Bush was responsible even for the second level, the real terrorist attack. I think he's a patsy. I think Osama bin Laden is a patsy. But I do think that George W. Bush is incompetent as leader of the free world of the United States in not discovering and prosecuting and trying to find out the real perpetrators of 9-1-1. And I have very strong suspicions that Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, and others in the administration knew about this in advance and were actually part and parcel of the attack.
Okay, Calvin, does that answer your question?
I have to say that actually George Bush actually responded a lot faster than any other president I know that was in office.
Well, I think that, you know, if you saw him that morning, I think he was frightened to death when he realized what had happened. He knew we were under attack. He went into the classroom. And then after he had been told by his assistant about the attack, he sat there for another 6 or 7 minutes. I think he was frightened to death about but I will tell you, as far as his response, it was already planned ahead of time. The plan for the attack on Afghanistan was sitting on the president's desk on the 10th of September. Do you think that happened just by accident?
No.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, if you want to, we'll document that for you.
And the Patriot Act was written before 911.
Right, as was the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act. So everything was planned ahead of time. They knew exactly what they were going to do. They were going to go to war with Iraq. That's what it was all about. But you had to have an excuse. Do you know of any better excuse that we could have had, Calvin?
Well, of course they're going to have people respond to that and have everything planned out for the president to speak.
Okay, fine. We're going to go to a break here. Welcome to stay out if you'd like. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Jimmy Walter. We have Calvin calling from Michigan, and we had a caller from Europe, but we'll get to his question in just a minute. And then, of course, if you're out there across America, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Calvin, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Oh, well, I mean, I might not know everything as far as politics, but you know, I'm just only responding to, just trying to get some more information about what y'all were saying about that.
Have you read any good books on what happened on 911?
No.
Could I suggest, I think an excellent book is a book we carry called War on Freedom. And, of course, another book that we carry is the book written by Jim Mars called Inside Job. And then I think Dr. Dennis Cuddy's two books. One of them is September 11th, Prior Knowledge, where he tells about the children in New York who were bringing their cameras to school on the morning of September 11th so they could take pictures of the attack on the World Trade Center. The kids all knew the attack was coming, but were told the FBI had no knowledge at all. Fascinating book, September 11th, Prior Knowledge, and, of course, Cover Up. And, of course, you can go then, of course, to Jimmy Waddler's website, and they've got a lot of books there. Get the facts, Calvin, and then why not give us a call back? How would that be?
Okay, that'd be fine.
God bless, and thanks so much, and please keep listening.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, we have a caller from Europe who'd called in. They didn't want to say because I guess they were going broke hanging on the line. Why didn't they take this whole issue to the International Court of Justice at The Hague? And the European caller says he doesn't think that Elliot Spitzer will ever touch the issue. So what about the opportunity to take this to some sort of an international court? Can that be done? Or does that have to be done by governments?
Well, I'm not qualified to answer the question, unfortunately. I certainly would take it to any court that would hear it myself. But and your caller may be entirely right that Spitzer won't. I was very disappointed when Bush was reelected. I thought that if Bush had been defeated, we had some chance of a real congressional investigation. And if Spitzer won't take it, well, he won't. But Spitzer has taken on the big boys, the drug companies, George Bush's supporters, and has won. So I feel like I'm in the last chapter of Lord of the Rings. I'm out there in the middle of the plain and we're surrounded by everybody else. No, we haven't got a very good chance, but it's the only chance we got.
Well, I think that there are an awful lot of good people out there. I wouldn't stay on here in America if I didn't think we've still got the greatest country and the greatest people in the world. We just got to mobilize those people and get them to understand what's at stake. And I fear that as the casualty, increase over in the Middle East, and as we're so short on troops, they're having to requiring the people, been out of the military for, 10 to 15 years, calling them back in again. And then, of course, we see them prolonging the tour of duty. People are supposed to come home. They're going to keep them there another couple of months. I think the morale of a lot of our forces over there is falling. And if we get involved in a war with Syria or Iran, maybe this is going to wake up the American people. All we can do is hope and pray that they're going to begin to question what's going on. Well, no, somebody called, and they want to know if a missile and not a plane hit the Pentagon. Let's see. And I'm reading this as it's put up on the. Mm-hmm. What happened to the other plane with Barbara Olson on it?
Well, first of all, if they're willing to
hold that for just a moment.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we have a caller. Barbara from Soquel, and she wants to know if it's true, or we're hypothesizing, that a missile hit the Pentagon and not a plane, and there are many, many people who believe that, and there's a great deal of evidence that indeed is the case. Then what happened to the other plane that had Barbara Olson on it? You know, well, we felt very close to Barbara Olson, but had an opportunity to interview her several times because of the books she had written about Hillary Clinton. She was a lovely woman, a talented woman. She was married to Ted Sorensen, who was the Solicitor General of the United States, and she'd even called her husband, apparently, and told him that the plane was hijacked. So what do you hypothesize, or I know that you don't know, and I don't know, but have you had any thoughts, or other people had any thoughts of what would have happened to the other plane?
Well, first of all, if they killed 2,801 people at the World Trade Center, a couple hundred more doesn't mean a thing to these people. They would murder them in an instant. Two, I don't know. I am only looking at the news reports and everything that everyone else has, and I can't comment on the Barbara Olson thing, but I can tell you this, that the United States Joint Chiefs of Staff in 1962 planned to have military personnel dress up as civilians, get on an allegedly civilian aircraft, take off from a civilian airport, secretly land the aircraft, have a drone, a remotely piloted vehicle, a cruise missile type aircraft, take off, shoot it down, blame it on the Cubans as a pretext to invade Cuba.
And that was Operation Northwood, if anybody would like a copy of that. And that's included in a syllabus we have called Iraq, the Untold Story. It's really so important that you actually read this. This was initially top secret. It was a Joint Chiefs of Staff plan how they were going to get us into a war. They wanted a war with
it. And they planned to kill U.S. civilians in order to do it.
Right. And, in fact, even one of the options was they were going to blow up the space capsule with John Glenn on it and blame it on Fidel Castro. They had all sorts of options, and an awful lot of people were going to die. And to John Kennedy's credit, and John Kennedy was not one of my favorite people, but John Kennedy said, "We are not going to do that. That's wrong. That's immoral."
And 6 months later, he was dead.
And that is the tragic thing. We may never know what happened to Barbara Olson, but it does plague us, the realization that this sort of thing could happen in America. Because if this really did happen, then there are wicked people in positions of power.
We already know about the main, in Cuba, the first Cuban crisis. We know about the Gulf of Tonkin. We know that the original Pearl Harbor was in all probability allowed to happen. We know Churchill allowed Coventry to be bombed. These things happen.
And they're allowed to happen for the psychological impact on the people. And of course, the story of Coventry, the British had broken the German code. They knew the planes, the German planes were on the way to bomb Coventry. In retaliation for the British bombing of open cities in Germany. And, of course, they did not warn the people of Coventry. They left them there to be killed because they needed something like that to inflame the British people and also the hopes that this would draw America into the war. They were all playing games with minds, and the people who were killed were simply pawns in this vicious game of war.
Cannon fodder.
Right. And until people understand that there really are people out there who have no compassion and no human concern for the lives of other people, until we understand there really are evil people out there, it's very, very difficult to understand much of what's going on in the world today. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest is Jimmy Walter, who's taken it unto himself, actually to invest his own money, not with any hope of getting a return, but...
Yeah, I think invest is not the right word here, but go on.
What should we say? Donate or...
Donate is about it.
All right. Well, at least to put it, the money out, to try tried to get the information out. And this is really what was so intriguing to me, that there was somebody out there who really felt strongly enough to really take a stand and risk, of course, everything, really, because the government can come back and retaliate, and they have retaliated against
I've had death threats. I've had my windshield smashed with a boulder. I've had, you know, all sorts of problems concerning this.
And you probably didn't understand really what you were getting into, did you, before you started?
Well, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Well, I'm glad that they haven't discouraged you. We're going to be back in just a moment with Jimmy Walter. We'll invite your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jimmy Walter. We're talking about, of course, what really happened on that fateful morning. We're told the government had no idea what was going to happen. Well, they knew there was going to be an attack, but they knew it was going to be overseas. They were 99% sure the attack was going to come overseas. Why did they think that? When, of course, it already had one of the hijackers defect and tell the FBI exactly what was planned. Of course, he didn't mention the World Trade Center, but there were so many implications that this was going to be the major target. In fact, one of the, I think, the most amazing parts of the story was a video that came out in 1974, put out by Stephen Emerson. And if you haven't seen that video, Jihad in America, you need to get it and watch it, because a lot of this was film footage that was shot by the FBI back in 1988 and 1989 in Oklahoma City. And there you'll see Abdullah Azzam, who was the leader of Al-Qaeda at the time, talking about, you know, the coming attack on America, how blood would run in the streets, and we'd have to cut off hands and feet so Allah would have legs to stand on, and talking about taking out the pillars of America's financial institutions. And they had all of this information. They even had pictures of members of the cell in the Islamic terrorist cell in New York at the firing range, firing automatic weapons back in 1989. They were watching all of these people, and of course the film was eventually released in 1994 and shown only one time, and somebody gave orders, this is not to be seen in America. Why? Because they couldn't let you know that they were monitoring, they were on top of this whole thing, they were watching all of these Islamic terrorists here in the United States. And if that really is true, if they had infiltrated the cells, then how could it be that they had no idea what was going to happen? That's why they couldn't let you see that video.
You know, also 1994, that the FBI provided the money and the explosives for that initial attack on the World Trade Towers.
Right. And that was, right, and that was, they certainly were involved with Mr. Salem, who was actually infiltrated this terrorist cell that was headed by the blind Sheikh, Sheikh Omar Rahman. So we'll be back here in just a moment as we evaluate what happened that morning. And, of course, we'll ask you if you have a question or comment. We'd love to hear from you, because this is, I think, the most important issue before the American people today. If we don't get to the bottom of what happened on 9-1-1, if the American people continue blindly following along with the dictates of the government, why, we will be, I believe, in World War III.
And we'll have no Bill of Rights left.
I agree with you totally. They're using this to take away our freedom. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Well, do you see this whole, the Patriot Bell really is more of an attack on the American people than the attack on the right of the terrorists?
Well, I was discussing this at dinner the other night, and the waiter piped up, Al-Qaeda is not making me take my shoes off at the airport. And I think that's the whole point. The people who are taking our freedoms are not Al-Qaeda, but George W. Bush, and they're setting us up for a martial law state. I'm really scared about what's going to happen to this country in the next 4 years with this Republican House, Senate, and legislature, and ever-increasing judiciary. We are embarking on a South African type apartheid type course, in terms of what's going to happen to this country.
Well, I certainly am very, very disturbed by Alberto Gonzalez being appointed Attorney General. Alberto Gonzalez was the man who okayed the use of torture, who said that, you know, if you were...
The Geneva Convention was quaint.
Right. I mean, this is a very, very dangerous man. He doesn't believe in the Constitution, and he is the one who's responsible, certainly for what happened to Guantanamo, for what happened to Abu Ghraib prison, really who has changed the whole attitude of our military towards the combatants. And of course, you know, instead of having the high moral ground why what we've done to our actions and the treatment of the people of Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib, and not just Abu Ghraib, but all of the prisons over there, and of course what's happened to prisoners in Afghanistan, and some of them have been tortured to death by Americans. Now, these are not American soldiers. These are mostly CIA operatives, and I think you must understand that there is another force that's out there. The CIA ran the war in Afghanistan. The CIA is running much of the war in Iraq, and what you have not heard, you've heard about, of course, the 1,100, close to 1,200 American soldiers have died. But there have been almost 800 CIA operatives. They call them contract workers. They're really CIA operatives. This is a CIA war, but they're not telling the American people that. And this is really what's scary, because they're the ones that ran the war in Vietnam, and we know how Vietnam ended up. So anyway, of course, we want to stick pretty well with what happened on 9-1-1, because 9-1-1 was then the prologue, first of all, to the attack on Afghanistan, then to the attack on Iraq. But we're not going to pull out of Iraq. I'm firmly convinced that they plan to keep our forces there indefinitely.
They're building bases there that will last 20 years.
Well, you wouldn't build those bases to last 20 years if you were planning on pulling your troops out.
Correct.
How are we going to get the American people really to begin to put this whole thing together? That's the hardest thing that, as far as I'm concerned. People, you know, I get calls almost every day from listeners who say, you know, I try to tell my friends about what's going on, and they just don't want to hear it.
No, they don't. I didn't believe it for 6 months. It's so unbelievable, you don't want to talk about it. And then I had to watch the videos. When I watched the videos, I knew... It was an epiphany to me. I knew that we've been attacked by high-tech terrorists that were going to get us again. And I think that this electronic voting machine thing in Ohio, if it goes the wrong way, I would be sitting back waiting for a terrorist event.
You know, what you're suggesting is that when they do the vote recount, now, when will that vote count be completed, you know?
Well, they can't even start till December 6th, if I remember correct. Because under Ohio law, you can't ask for a recount until the vote's been certified, and that won't be until either somewhere between the 6th and the 12th.
Now, who's going to ask for the recount? I know that there were people in the Libertarian Party and the Green Party were going to ask for a recount. Are they the ones who are asking for it, or who's asking for it? Because John Kerry obviously played the part, and then the leaders of the Democrat Party saying, oh, no, we don't want to challenge the vote. But I know the Libertarians and the Green Party are going to do it, and I've been talking...
The Libertarians and the Green Party have definitely challenged the vote and raised the money, now we're into rumor. The rumor is that the Kerry people will join in, but there was a judge ruling that since Kerry didn't ask for the recount, that even if he comes up as a winner, it might not be a true recount for Kerry. So I don't want anyone to take that as the gospel or the law, because it is really secondhand email stuff that I've been reading.
Well, I think that the thing that really convinced me more than anything that the whole election was a charade, that Kerry did not challenge the vote. And I think that there was every reason to, you know, when you get one voting machine that has a hiccup, it gives you 4,000 votes in a district with only 800 registered voters, you know that this is a rigged election. I mean, that's even worse than they used to do in Chicago, where they had all the people, you know, in the cemeteries voting.
Well, and it's pervasive all the way through. If you look at it, in the 10 states that were pivotal, in 9 of them, Bush beat the odds beyond 2 statistical standard deviations. 3, actually. it's 250 million to one that what happened happened. It just didn't happen. The fact of the matter is the election was stolen by the electronic optical card readers. And the touchscreens actually read right. It was the optical card readers that consistently favored Bush.
Well, are there any paper trails there? Is there a paper trail?
Yeah, they're optical card readers. The cards are still there.
Oh, in other words, they do have cards there in Ohio then.
Yes, but the question is, are they just going to feed them back to the optical card readers, or are they going to hand count them this time?
Well, I think you're going to have a hand count, because that's the only way we can be sure. And even then, of course, there can be a skullduggery, but I think it gives you a far better chance, because they're going to have to fix an awful lot or bribe an awful lot more people. If they're counted by hand, they only have to bribe one or two people, certainly to alter the machine count. So let's go to Nathan. Fine. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Good evening. Well, sir, I'm sorry, your name again, sir?
His name is Jimmy Walter.
Mr. Walter, yes. There's a lot you said tonight that I could comment on, and it's too much for me to comment on all of that. There's things I agree with, things I disagree with, definitely. But one thing of this election, there's something very wrong about this. Warren County, Ohio, claimed they walled off the vote count. This was part of the crucial vote count that supposedly gave President Bush Ohio. But they walled it off, claiming that Homeland Security and FBI warned them that they were high up on a terrorist alert list. This has been documented. It's rarely been commented on, but we are living in the midst of a skull and bones coup. Kerry's concession that just came suddenly. They were going to challenge the vote just the night before, but I believe that the call came in, and that morning Kerry conceded November 3rd. So it's very obvious to me that we didn't really have an election. Now, whether I believe 9-1, scenarios people put out there on 9-1-1 or whatnot is a more complicated story, but you're definitely right on that one. And Americans need to get rid of electronic voting, and we need to get back to a hand-counted ballot, but I don't think it's going to happen because I think it's gone too far now.
Okay.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. And one last thing. Get America under Torah now, or it's too late.
Bye-bye. Okay. That was Nathan calling from Contra Costa. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or, of course, 464-8295. And I think Nathan is, when he says under Torah, is referring, get back under God's rule, because the Torah was the basis of the Ten Commandments, and, of course, the foundation then upon which Christianity was built, came out of Judaism. Well, anyway, we're talking with Jimmy Walter this evening, and, of course, we're talking about what really happened on the morning of 9-1-1, and when you, of course, take a stand, when you oppose what the establishment intends, why you come under tremendous power, tremendous attack, and Jimmy apparently has had all sorts of harassment and things of that sort, but he, of course, he's done what he thought was right, and I think everyone out there in the listening audience has to do what is right. Young American men are dying overseas in Iraq, and of course the government said, oh shucks, well, we were wrong, there weren't any weapons of mass destruction, and well, Osama bin Laden really wasn't involved with the attack on 9-1-1, but after all, isn't the world better off with a Saddam Hussein gone? I mean, after all, aren't the Iraqi people better off? The pictures of Fallujah, that we've totally destroyed that city, and we're going to destroy more cities over there.
They have no economy. They stand in bread lines for us.
And, of course, there's a tremendous malnutrition in the children, and what we are succeeding in doing, in my estimation, is inflaming the entire Islamic world against America. There was no animosity towards America before we started doing what we were doing. Right after 9-1-1, we had tremendous goodwill, and I think most people in the Islamic world felt that we had to strike back against Osama bin Laden, only we didn't try to get Osama bin Laden. And then, of course, instead of trying to get Osama bin Laden, we attacked Iraq, which I believe was the plan all the while, don't you?
Well, we know, obviously, that they were talking about that in the first days of the White House. We know that was practically the first words out of Rumsfeld's lips when he took office as Secretary of Defense. There's no doubt about it that from the inside information that that's been released, that the administration was after Saddam Hussein from hell or high water.
And I think for those of you who have any question into what Jimmy is saying, you need to get the book, The Price of Loyalty by Paul O'Neill. It's a really rather interesting book, but I believe it's page 96. I could stand corrected on that. But that is, of course, where they're actually talking at the first National Security Commission meeting he attends, Paul O'Neill attends, and they're talking about how we're going to divide the oil up over there and how we're going to justify a preemptive strike on Iraq. Now, you know, Paul O'Neill has nothing to gain by lying about that. I think it's a very a straightforward book by a man I rather like. We probably would disagree on certain aspects of politics, but I think he's telling a true story, and of course that to me would be a grounds for, I think, trial of everybody who was involved at that meeting and their complicity in what happened on 9/11, because they were looking for an excuse to go to war. And isn't it coincidence that just a few months later they suddenly got that excuse?
Well, and to the detriment of the United States. We have hundreds of thousands of United States citizens who have died, tens of thousands of foreigners who have died, with serious breaches to the United States Bill of Rights, and an economy, in my opinion, which has been faltering, and they've been fudging the figures on, but which they're running out of room to fudge, and they're going to have to start paying the piper. Yeah. Morgan Stanley predicted an economic Armageddon yesterday.
And I think that was a fascinating, one of the top economists had said that we got 9 chances out of 10 of having, and that was his term, wasn't it, an economic Armageddon?
Yes, that was his exact terms, and he says it's a 9 out of 10 that we're going to have it, but they do have a 60% chance of delaying it for a few years.
Well, that's not very, very encouraging. But what we're talking about, of course, destroying the savings of and the wealth of the middle class of this country. And but then, of course,
you do know that the Financial Times of London accused George W. Bush and Alan Greenspan of being in cahoots to do exactly that.
To do exactly what?
To destroy the social and economic programs of the United States, to eliminate what they call collectivism in the United States government.
Well, when did that? Because I missed that. Is that
the
recent?
Financial Times of London? I think it was the title of something. The Lunatics Are Running the Asylum.
Financial Times: Lunatics Running the Asylum.
And they had talked about George W. Bush and Alan Greenspan, and this has been a few months ago. If you send me an email, we'll talk later. I'll send you the article.
All right, fine. Well, I'm not questioning that at all. I just like to have these things.
You know, but I know you'd like to have the first-hand article, so I'll send it to you.
All right, fine. Well, I'm not sure these are lunatics. I really am very, very seriously concerned that they know exactly what they're doing, and I think they're going to wreck our economic system.
But I still think that makes them lunatics. But go on. Well, I agree with you, though.
But the thing is that really, as our attention is being focused on what's going on over in Iraq, you know, and our casualties, and of course the services, the funeral services for them, why we're not watching what's happening here at home. And
no,
I think we're seeing the destruction of our society.
Well, look at the 4 hurricanes that hit Florida. We're witnessing the destruction of our environment.
All right, fine. Well, now, what sort of response are you getting when you get on the other radio programs? Are usually the hosts pretty much in agreement with you?
Oh, I have everywhere from Geraldo sliced and diced me, didn't give me a chance to recuperate. Anderson Cooper did a pretty good job. Actually, they were kind of adversarial, but at least they got a fair chance to respond. But most of the people now, even some that started out adversarial, are now pretty wanting to get to the truth of the matter. And I don't have all the answers here, but we need people to go to our website, reopen911.org, and sign the petition to get Spitzer or someone to reopen or open. Actually, reopen is, people stung me on that one. What do you mean reopen? If you said there wasn't good investigation to begin with, so I know we really should be say open an investigation, but it really is just, we've been roped into this nomenclature of reopen911.org. The last thing I want is for those people to get back up and to reinvestigate because they did such a daggum bad job of it the first time.
And I really think that the advantage, you have to have an official investigation. There are a lot of people who would tell the truth about what happened. I mean, there are a lot of FBI agents out there who knew exactly what was going to happen, and some of them went to David Shippers and told him, there's going to be an attack on the lower Manhattan. We can't come forward. We can't risk our jobs, but you need to tell the people in Washington, D.C. And David Shippers, who knew the Attorney General, John Ashcroft, personally, and the leaders of Congress, because David Shippers had been in charge of the House, the impeachment hearings, he had been the counsel for the House Impeachment Committee, nobody would talk to him. In other words, the only thing you can imagine is they knew something was coming down the line. And they
is this the man that they suppressed his book as well?
Let's see. I don't know that they suppressed David Shippers' book, but they certainly would not talk to him at all.
Well, there was an FBI agent who knew about it all coming down, wrote a book, and the FBI won't let him print it.
No, I don't know about that. Was that Williams or...
I don't have it in front of me, but I'll get it for you and let you know.
All right, I'd really like to know about that. And of course, the FBI agents went to my friend Garth Nicholson, told him 11th of September, told him about the Pentagon, didn't tell him about the World Trade Center, and of course, notified people in Washington, D.C. FBI agents talked to William Gregg and said, sure, we know what's coming down the line, but there was nothing we could do about it. There was nobody to tell. And right now, of course, we can't do anything unless we are called to testify. And at that point, why, of course, we would have to tell the truth. So I think there are a lot of people out there who are looking for an opportunity for an investigation. It's up to you and I out there in the listening audience to get Mr. Spitzer to open an investigation.
We have Republicans, Libertarians, Democrats, and Greens all supporting this.
And I think that really, in fact, I will tell you, I hate to say this, but I come from the more or less conservative evangelical Christian point of view, and I get more support for what we talk about from the liberals and the leftists and the socialists and the environmentalists than we're getting from the Christians who are following blindly behind their leaders, who I think, like the Pied Piper of Hamlet, are leading them to the destruction. And I was at a meeting, I guess it was weekend before last, with the leading Christian conservatives, about 500 or 600 of them, and it was a cheering section for the Bush administration for the war and the just war. And well, I had 3 minutes to speak. I don't know whether I convinced anybody or not, but at least we raised some questions. And that's all we can do, is try to reach the good people. But they are being led to their own destruction by what I believe are misled leaders. Well, we've got about 2 minutes more.
I just have to say something on that, because I believe that the teachings of Jesus Christ are divine. I can't believe that other people can't be saved, but Jesus Christ, Matthew 5, if you read Matthew 5, what Jesus Christ said, you cannot support George W. Bush. You cannot read there where he says, no longer will it be an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, where he says, resist not evil, and then hear a man who says we have to go halfway around the world destroying evil. This is not a Christian in the White House.
Well, I think we've got real problems here in America, and I appreciate and really I admire your willingness to take a stand and to do what you're doing, and I will give you a call off the air. I would like very much to get that copy of the article from the Financial Times, and of course, stay in touch with you and get kept abreast of what you're doing.
Anything we can do together, I'd be happy to do.
Well, we actually do three other programs, three different audiences, and I will want to get you on those as well if you're game, because
absolutely.
I want them to hear your message.
Thank you, sir. Please have your people go to reopen911.org just to get the investigation reopened. We need to have answers.
And
call 888-INVESTIGATE.
888-INVESTIGATE, and that's 888-468-3784. That's 888-468-3784, and www.reopen911.org. Thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, sir, and have a great night.
Good night. All right, fine. Well, that was Jimmy Walter, and certainly a man who was willing to really get involved and put his really put his life and his fortune on the line. I wish we had a few more like that out across America, but I wanted to, him to share his story with you. But I will tell you, he's walking a very, very dangerous line right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I was just commenting to our listeners that I admire Jimmy Walter because he's been willing to risk his life, his fortune, his family in this battle to try to awaken the American people as to what really happened on 9-1-1. And there have been other people, well-to-do people, who've taken a stand. One of them was Ross Perot. You remember when he ran for the presidency back in, I guess it was 92, but what most people don't know, remember he came in the race and then he dropped out of the race. Then he came back in later, and of course he said he dropped out because there were threats against his life and the life of his family. Well, I had the opportunity to interview a man who was a CIA assassin. His job was to kill Ross Perot. Now, he refused to do that and went public with the story, and so I guess they called off the hit. But, of course, who was giving him the orders at that time? A man named George Herbert Walker Bush, who was running at that time against Bill Clinton. And, of course, if Ross Perot had stayed in the race, why, of course, he would have pulled votes away from George Bush. And eventually Ross Perot did come back in the race and did pull the votes away from George Bush. But it was so interesting hearing Ross Perot's story. And, of course, he was talking about the fact that the Republicans were threatening him and his family, and then talking to Chip Tatum. And Chip has sort of disappeared off the face of the earth, but we do have some interviews with him in some of our tape sets, going into the background of the CIA and the FBI. But there really are paid assassins out there. They're paid by your government. I've interviewed actually three separate paid assassins. One was L.D. Brown, who was recruited into the CIA, but none other than Bill Clinton. And, of course, his job was first to run drugs. He wouldn't do that. And then they told him, well, he could kill a drug smuggler. One of those wicked drug smugglers was corrupting the American people. And, he thought that wouldn't be so bad, He could get into the CIA, and all he had to do was kill this drug smuggler. But when he got to Mexico, and the man he was supposed to kill was pointed out to him, he wasn't a Mexican. He wasn't from Central America. He was an American who was vacationing there in Mexico with his wife and children. His name was Terry Reid. And, of course, Terry Reid wrote a book, Compromised, Bush, Clinton, and the CIA and the MENA connection. So, they were going to kill Terry Reid because he'd written a very, very critical book exposing the CIA and Bush and Clinton and drugs. And then there was a third assassin that we've talked to, Colonel Marvin. All of these people have come forward. The fact that this sort of thing goes on in America today is a rather frightening thing. But Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Dan Rather, and Tom Brokaw would never tell you about this sort of thing. We live in a violent world, and of course, behind all of this are those dark spirits of forces that we oppose, and we must oppose them. And I believe we have an obligation to stand for righteousness and to try to expose really what's going on in the world today. We hope that many of you out there will go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day. You can hear our programs 4 hours a day on the Internet. 5 hours a day on the Internet, 4 hours a day on shortwave. You can hear us 4 hours a day, 5 hours a day actually on satellite. And we're on the radio someplace across America 5 hours every day, about 60 stations a week. We're small, but we have a growing voice, and we do hope that many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family and help us. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Remember that book, The War on Freedom, the book Inside Job, September 11th, Prior Knowledge by Dr. Cuddy and Cover Up by Dr. Cuddy. Get the information. Help us save America. Till Thursday, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.